Brad Sesmatch Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Wednesday. Thanks for being with us. Pedro is back. That is good news. First week of the baseball season. Our weekly conversation with ESPN baseball analyst Pedro Gomez. Another year. Year five of Pedro every week, or every other week to start with, as the season gets going. We'll talk with Pedro. I believe he's in St. Louis, Eric. He was yesterday when I was texting him. Do you hear anything?
I don't know. That's a good question.
You don't know?
Is he in St. Louis?
He's just going to show up. That's where I caught him yesterday.
Then, yes.
Might be
even though they're rained out, though. So, if he's there for Wednesday night baseball.
He might be catching a flight and saying, get me out of here. They already rained out?
Yeah, they're already rained out.
Wow. Good for him.
Yeah.
That's not a bad place to get stuck.
Unscheduled off day.
So we're going to get into that. I had a lot of feedback yesterday over the segment we did on Hamilton High School, and it's not often here on the stream show. If you go to the website, you know, sports360az.com, you'll see that we do plenty of content on high school, college, pro college, high school. I work some high school in here on the show when I feel that it is appropriate. We should never, ever, ever, ever be in a space where we're not afraid to talk about issues on the high school level because, oh, you're going all the way down to high schools. Who really goes out to high schools? Well, then you're not a high school dad, and you haven't been in that space in life yet. So I do that just as easily as I have people say, why do you do so much fantasy football, or why do you do Jimmy Vaccaro on gambling? Because that's where things are. And high school's where it's at. A lot of you that are watching your high school dads. So when you have a program like Hamilton High School that has been brought down to its knees over this hazing incident and their coach being reassigned, I want to have a voice on that we've not had on the show before, but someone from afar, I've really admired his work because I think he digs deep. Ralph Amsden with ArizonaVarsity.com, he's their publisher. And Ralph's just kind of self-made. He was a teacher in high school. I think he was at Chandler High, Eric. You know Ralph better than
I believe so, yeah, Chandler High.
And he started this like 5 years ago, 4 years ago. He was forward-thinking on the whole digital front. And he's become like the voice of C-Town and does a good job.
He's pretty locked in that district. So if you're looking for good high school content around the Chandler schools, besides us, he's the go-to. And there's a mutual respect between our staff and Ralph.
Okay.
Dating back.
I didn't know that.
Dating back a ways.
There is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, we're not fond of everybody. I mean, some days I come in, I'm not fond of you. Some days you come in, you're definitely not fond of me.
What are you talking about? When was the last time I wasn't fond of you?
This morning?
Shut up. Get out of here. What are you talking about? What do you mean? Because there's some stuff there. One of the star players at Hamilton did transfer down the street to Chandler yesterday. They're starting defensive lineman. And then their quarterback last night got offered by Michigan.
Big offer. Big.
Well,
it's one thing if you get offered by Indiana and you get offered by South Carolina, but then when Jim Harbaugh says, hey, why don't you come play quarterback for me in the big house?
Right. Right.
Different level. No offense to those schools, but.
And then the tailback who's getting offered all over the place went on Twitter last night and said, I'm staying. So
good for him.
Because Mr. Jordan was looking at going down the street to Chandler as well. It's really interesting how this stuff all works. And Ralph will have better insight out than I do. So we'll have Ralph Amsden with us at about 10:35. Last night I watched some of the Diamondbacks game, and it was refreshing to hear Bob Brenly. There's something comforting about like an old pair of jeans, not that Bob's old, but an old pair of jeans that are comfortable, that have been washed a few times, and some tennis shoes that you're comfortable in. There's something comfortable about walking around the house with a baseball game on, with Bob Brenly on in the background. This is not old man get off my lawn. This is just me hanging out last night. I actually had a night where I could get a lot of work done because I had nobody in the house. So I did my man cave thing with the Coyotes game on, the Diamondbacks game on.
And when you talk about BB, Brad, the thing that I love about him is that I do this sometimes where I'll just have the game on downstairs and I could be upstairs and not even seeing what's happening in the game, but I'm picturing through his definition and his different insight on the game, and I know what's going on without even really having to watch the game. And that's a very, very unique and skilled trait to have as a color analyst.
Well, it's like hearing Al McCoy.
Yep.
I can tell Al within 10 seconds, okay, the Suns are losing, the Suns are winning. You can just... If you have a trained ear, you can flip it on, and there's Al, who, in my opinion, should still be doing the TV of the Suns. That's just me. It's no offense to Steve Albert, but it's Al. Come on. And but to hear Bob last night was comforting. It was refreshing. It was nice. It was not a good game. They were not good last night. Patrick Corbin wasn't good. The Archie Bradley, I don't usually make stuff out of people's facial hair. I mean, Karnowski we did with Gonzaga because it was Karnowski. Did you see Archie Bradley last night?
I did.
What he's got going?
I saw what he was throwing, and I saw what he was wearing.
What he's growing?
Growing.
What he's throwing? He was throwing gas.
He was throwing strikes, lots of them.
And, you know, you look at it and say, well, why can't he do this all the time?
Maybe this is the start, Brad. Maybe.
Oh, come on. How many times have we heard that? Well,
he's still young. That's the thing. When
he's 23.
You come straight out of high school,
yeah,
I mean,
he's 23.
He's not even in his prime yet.
But the beard makes him look like he's 33. And it's one of those deals where you expect a bird to come out of it at some point, or there's a nest in there, or there's bed bugs in there or something. You know, I don't know. But it was an interesting look to see Archie last night. Taiwan Walker pitches tonight. I am going to watch. And I did see some of Russell Westbrook last night, because for what he's doing on the floor, I do not have a vote in the MVP of the NBA. I vote for the Wooden Award, and I vote for the Heisman. I have college votes. I don't have an NBA MVP vote. I really don't know how to go, though, on this Westbrook against Harden deal. Because whenever I watch Westbrook, I feel like it's 1-on-5. When I see Harden and I see how he's turned Houston around and how Mike is using him, it makes me want to use Harden. It makes me want to go to Harden as the guy, as the MVP, because I think Westbrook's going to be a one-and-done dude. We have the Warriors in town tonight, and so Golden State is here, and this should be a game tonight where the Suns lose by 30. Golden State is going to start turning it up here, because now they're coming down to the home stretch. The NBA has become, yeah, there's some games in November, and it's first time Kevin Durant plays, and yeah, there's some intrigue. And then the league's kind of in a lull. Then there's Christmas Day when they're on quite a bit. And then in January, February, most of March, it's all about the drama and the gossip and the I hate you and this guy can't play and Carmelo Anthony story and LeBron's not happy with his teammate or is LeBron going to lose a title? And that's all that's stuffed down our throats for like 3 months. And then around the first week in April, because the players are pacing themselves, you don't think they're pacing themselves, you know, watch these games and see how hard they're playing in February and March versus how hard they're playing when it comes playoff time. Well, when there's about 10 games to go in the regular season and players start looking at the standings, come on, guys, we've all done this. It doesn't matter if it's in our high school league, if it's in the church league, if it's in the beer league, if it's in the athletic club league. We all look at what the other teams have, and we all know in our heads why I'd really like to open against that team. And so players don't play. It doesn't matter what league you're in, or players are held out. Do you think it's any accident all the Suns haven't won a game here in a few weeks? When you don't think games can be manipulated, you're being naive on this whole deal. Yeah, it's fun watching Devin Booker, but it's really interesting when Devin Booker gets pulled out and there's a close game and there's a few minutes to go and he's got to rest. They're not trying to win. I don't blame Earl Watson for this, but the point is Golden State's got to get everything fine-tuned, and so the Suns should be a speed bump tonight. They really should. But that said, when Steph Curry comes into town, there should be buzz. When Klay Thompson is in town, there should be buzz. And there will be to an extent, but I don't know. Is the game sold out? Eric, have you heard of the games that I sold out at Suns?
I have not, but I would doubt it.
I would doubt it, too. I mean, it would
be.
It's
a Wednesday night. Season's almost over.
Filled with empty seats everywhere. But wouldn't you want to go stand down on the baseline at like 5 o'clock and watch Steph Curry go through his warm-ups?
Sure.
When I was doing the Channel 3 thing, okay, and I would go to the desk, that's where you go and tell people where you want to be that day, or they tell you where they want to be that day, and that's why I'm sitting here, because most days I'd get people who are like, sports? You want to be where? Oh, we got a cat in a tree. We can't put you down at the Suns. Who really cares about the Suns? Well, I'm trying to do my thing here, guys. Oh, no. We got to pull your shooter and go put him out here to do a story on a tree that's going to be cut down that's 100 years old. Because, you know, people just don't care about this. No, they don't care because you don't care.
there could be a mini Haboob rolling through the valley.
Could be.
So we need to take all of our resources and get you out in front of a dust lot somewhere.
There's sandbagging going on. This happened, true story. So I'm sitting here. There's sandbagging going on out on the west side for a major storm that's coming. We've got team coverage. The storm never came, and the bags were filled, and they weren't used. Dopes.
Someone say the Suns have been sandbagging all year.
I know, that's true. For years. No, but when I was able to go to the people, and you'd figure it out after a while, okay, this person has no idea even how to get to the arena. They have no idea that it's even an NBA team. But I'd get down to the arena, and you get there at like 4:30, 4:15, and you have your stories that you're working on. But one of the cool things about what I did in the local TV time, and there were some of them, outside of the frustration that I show occasionally about the nonsense that goes on, I feel bad for my cohorts, was going down there when a player like Steph Curry would come into town, and he would come out on the court, and he'd have somebody with him who'd be rebounding for him, and he would go through his whole routine, and he would be doing it 2.5 or 2 hours before the game even started, before the doors even opened, and nobody would see how hard he's working his ass off. Nobody. And then he'd go out on the floor and just kill people. Kobe Bryant would go down to the practice court with the Suns. He'd never come out on the floor. You wouldn't see him unless it was shoot around. Guy like Karl Malone, I can go back that far. Karl Malone would run all the stairs of the whole building and then score 40 on the Suns. It was amazing how he just worked himself to death on this. Nowadays, we got to monitor minutes, you know. And so do I sound like grumpy old guy on the lawn? Maybe on this one. But Steph Curry in town. You get down there at 5:30 and you watch Steph Curry go through his warm-ups. It's fun. We're going to talk about the Masters a little bit later on. Today was a good day if you're a MLS Pursuit here in Phoenix fan for Phoenix Rising. I'll explain that. But up next, Pedro Gomez. We'll talk to you about Tony Romo. I'm going to circle back on that. Pedro Gomez from rainy St. Louis, ESPN baseball analyst. He joins us next, talking major leagues on Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussman.
It's time to talk Arizona Diamondbacks and Major League Baseball with ESPN insider Pedro Gomez. Here's Brad Sussman.
Another year with Pedro Gomez. Good to get him on board every week or every other week to start out with through the season. We'll bring him in slowly this year. He's already been blown out from tonight, where the game in St. Louis has been postponed between the Cubs and Cardinals. So when this happens, I'm just curious, what does your day turn into when you get rained out? Do you try to immediately get out of the city, or what happens here?
Well, I was scheduled to leave tonight because they were supposed to finish with the Cards tonight. And the game got moved till Thursday, till tomorrow. But because the Masters is going on and that takes up so much real estate on all of our shows, they just said, just go ahead and go home. I do have to turn around and come back to be with the Cubs early next week because they are raising the championship banner on Monday. And then on Wednesday is the ring ceremony, so I will be heading home, but turning right back to the Midwest on Sunday.
Okay, so I want to know this to let the fans know. Does this turn into a travel headache day for you, or does somebody handle it all for you?
Yeah, it's not horrible. You know what? On a day like this, I just call the airline directly to eliminate the middleman, so to speak.
Yeah.
And so I'm able to get on a little bit of an earlier flight, which helps.
So you'll be home this afternoon where it's going to be 82, 83 degrees.
Early evening.
In Ahwatukee. Nothing wrong with that. All right, so we were a couple days into this. I'll get over to the Diamondbacks in a minute, but you know, from the Cubs' point of view, because you've been around them in spring, I'm sure, and back there, is this a better team from your view than the one that finished last season, winning the World Series?
You know, they are more set because of the success they had last year. There are some juggling points though for Joe Maddon because you've got Ben Zobrist, you've got Javier Baez, you've got Albert Almora and John Jay in center field. Like, you've got some moving pieces that you're not going to be able to get everybody into the lineup every day.
Right.
And so you're going to need some players to understand that, number one, and not be selfish. And so there's definitely more work involved. And, you know, they all won a World Series. So they're going to want to get in there and play every day. But when you've got Kyle Schwarber and Ben Zobrist splitting time in left field, you've got Ben Zobrist and Javi Baez splitting time at second base. Like, you know, it turns into a little bit of a juggling act. And so even though they are more set and they're definitely more confident because of the World Series title, it doesn't make it easier. And, you know, this is one of the issues with trying to repeat as a champion, that everybody kind of says, hey, what about me? What about me? Mm-hmm. And that can kind of tear at the fabric of a clubhouse. I'm not saying that's happening, because it has not, but it's something just to look out for.
Well, and let's be honest with one another. They're a pitch away here, a pitch away there from not being World Series champs. So
yeah, oh God, they listen.
Right.
That ninth inning in San Francisco alone in the first round in the DS, that would have been the end of them right there, because if they head back to Chicago for game 5 and it's Johnny Cueto against John Lester again, which in game 1 was that 1-0 game where Baez hit the solo homer, it could very easily flip-flop the other way, especially with the Cubs having lost 2 in a row going into that game 5, there were people ready to jump in Chicago.
It's interesting. We're talking with Pedro Gomez, ESPN baseball analyst. He joins us at sports360az.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. What's interesting about this, Pedro, is let's flip it around to Cleveland. So the Indians are here this weekend against the Diamondbacks. And Saturday night, Trevor Bauer against Zach Greinke. How about that? It's not bad. There's a little bit of drama, irony there.
The one-time future ace of the D-backs against the current ace of the D-backs. Yeah, there's definitely a plot line there. And you know what? I saw the Indians quite a bit during spring training, other than when I was gone for the World Baseball Classic. That team is absolutely loaded. And when you think that the Indians came within one inning of winning it all,
right,
and never had Carlos Carrasco or Danny Salazar, their second and third best starting pitchers, start a single game in the month of October. They didn't have Michael Brantley, their best outfielder. They didn't have Yan Gomes, their starting catcher, during the entire month of October. That tells you right there what type of job Terry Francona was able to do.
That's well put. So is there a team outside those two that you look at? Just a team. I know you could list a whole bunch of them. Do you have a team this year that you're looking at saying they're going to be playing in late October this year outside of those two?
Yeah. It's going to pain, I think, a lot of D-back fans, but I think the team that plays in Chavez Ravine.
Yeah.
A year in with Dave Roberts now, that is a very, very closer-knit clubhouse with a lot of talent. And they've got the pieces necessary to be playing late in October.
In terms of our hometown heroes here, so I like where Torey Lovullo is. I think that, you know, Hazen's come in. He's trying to do his thing. Is there a reason, from your view, to see that the bottoming out has happened? There's going to be rough seas ahead in 2017. Are they a 75-win team, 85-win team? What do you make out of the hometown nine here?
Yeah, they're probably closer to a 75-win team. But I think that they're, the trajectory is definitely going upward, whereas last year it was not.
Mm-hmm.
And Torey Lovullo, an excellent, excellent hire. He has the opportunity to be here for a lot of years, because he is going to stabilize that manager's chair, which has been kind of a revolving door for years now. So even though he doesn't have a lot of experience, he did, you know, gain some when John Farrell was sick and he had to take over for a few months in Boston. No doubt that has helped him to be where he, you know, is much more comfortable now, especially in a city like Boston, where every day you're putting out fires, media-wise, team-wise, roster-wise, you name it. So he's been indoctrinated. He was in the deep end of the pool there. And so that'll undoubtedly help him. He has a tremendous personality, gets along with almost everybody I've ever seen him with. And, you know, just a grade A hire in Torey Lovullo. So that part is stabilized. Now you just have to get, you know, Hazen to be able to start moving the roster in the right direction. That takes a little time. That is not something that happens overnight, but it can happen within a relatively short time, 3 to 4 years. And so if Mike Hazen can navigate that part of it, then the D-backs absolutely could be contending within a few years.
Yeah, the problem is I've been hearing 3 to 4 years. I'm not taking a swipe at you.
It's yes.
We've been hearing 3 to 4 years for 3 to 4 years.
And the revolving door at the general manager spot has been an absolute issue, no doubt. You and I have talked about this over the course of the last few years. You cannot continue to just change general managers every 2 to 3 years.
Okay, I'm going to throw three names at you, and if you can just give me 20 to 30 seconds on each one and what is going to happen or what you expect. And let's start with Shelby Miller.
10 to 11 wins. He's going to take the ball. There's going to be good days and there's going to be bad days, but the good days will keep him in the rotation. And, you know, when he bottoms out, it's going to be, there'll be a few questions about how much longer can you leave him in. The reality is they don't have a lot of options, so I expect him to be in the rotation all season.
All season past July 31st, or by, let's see.
You know, if he's having a good first half, that's certainly an option for Mike Hazen to, again, you've got to look at your assets and see how you can improve your organization. If he's having a good first half, he will not be a D-back in the second half. If he's just, you know, chugging along, he'll be a D-back.
If Zach Greinke is having a good first half of the season, do they get out from under this contract, or is he here for the long haul?
They will get out, and they'll have to eat some of that money. But if you can bring in a little bit of a haul for a Zach Greinke, it's well worth the exchange because they're not ready to do it right now. And Greinke is under contract for the next 5 years here. And you know what? If you've got a team that is a big market team that's in contention, that's a team that will snag a guy like Greinke, knowing or thinking he could be the final piece to push them over the top.
Knowing what you know about him and what you saw in spring training, do you think he's here past July 31st this year?
No, I don't. I think that as long as he's having a healthy first half, somebody out there, maybe Boston, if David Price is not, you know, healthy, we'll say, okay, we're going to go for it this year. Let's go.
What happens with Paul Goldschmidt here between now and July 31st, or is he going to be here no matter what?
He'll be here. He's not going anywhere. He's under such a club-friendly contract. And there's you know, through 2019, that's still 17, 18, 19. You've got 3 years of him at a very, very relatively low price for a player of that stature. And he's the face of the franchise. He's here.
Okay, and there's no way on his end that his people are going to start saying, you know what, this contract is unacceptable. We don't want to be here and be on this.
They could absolutely say that.
Yeah.
I think that that's such an un-Paul Goldschmidt thing to do. I think he would probably not allow it to happen, but if somehow his agency says, no, let me be the bad guy, that's fine. And the D-backs will say, okay, but you're still under contract. You're not going anywhere.
Good stuff, man. Safe travels. Talk soon. Thanks.
Okay. All right, Brad. Take care.
See you, Pedro. It's Pedro Gomez, ESPN Baseball analyst and insider. I'll take that. Ralph Amsden is next. Fresh voice, ArizonaVarsity.com, on this Hamilton story, inside and out from his view. That's next. I'm Brad Sussmat. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Our football show tonight, Brad Sussmat, Football AZ on Fox Sports Arizona, before and after the Diamondbacks game, 14 airings during the week. We appreciate our partnership with Fox Sports Arizona. The Hamilton Husky hazing football story in the direction of one of the most powerful programs in the state being brought down to its knees continues to resonate with many, many, many of you, not just people that are in the Southeast Valley, but people from around the state. I've received notes on this, message boards and all that stuff. And someone who's much more plugged in on this than I am. Yeah, I live out there and yeah, I know the parties involved, but Ralph Amsden lives it every day. He's with ArizonaVarsity.com. He has a terrific podcast, C-Town, on that site. And Ralph is somebody I have a great deal of respect for. He joins us via Skype for his view, the latest on Hamilton High School. Is this starting to turn in the positive direction, meaning the all the bad stuff that has happened? And it's awful. It's awful. But it feels like in the last 24 hours, with Dick Banaszewski being named to put it, oversee the football program, that maybe they're starting to get the ship turned around a little bit.
I think that they're attempting to make positive strides toward getting the ship turned in the right direction, but I would not expect for it to be just positive storylines from here on out. I think this is probably far from over as far as the negative aspects and some of the more sordid storylines that we're going to see come out.
Okay, so let's go back on this, Ralph. From your understanding, take myself and the people through from the police on campus to where that story is now, the legal side and the illegal activity that took place.
Well, six players were arrested while on campus, sort of in one general sweep, which I'm assuming the police did to have everybody, to know that everybody's in one place and to keep it from getting messy or more complicated than it was going to be. One student who was at Hamilton and part-time attended Chief Hill Academy and five at Hamilton. Since then, they have decided to prosecute three and maybe seeking additional charges. One student's name, who turned 17 maybe 1 or 2 days before he was arrested, is being charged as an adult. From what I understand, prosecutors are seeking to charge everybody as an adult in this case. And this is stemming from incidents that allegedly took place in May and August of 2015, I believe, and December of 2016. At least that's what's listed on the Maricopa County reports that you're able to access online. Those incidents would have occurred when one of the suspects was a freshman and then going into his sophomore year. And then again, in December of 2016 would have made him a junior at that point. A couple of the people wrapped up in this during the first instances that are listed on the police report would have been in junior high. So it's not really clear who was involved in what and when, but the charges are incredibly serious. Again, the police, the prosecutors declined to charge a couple of the players who were ultimately arrested, one of them being an adult. And then since that time, obviously, we've seen Steve Bellis reassigned, and the district really remained quiet because the police instructed them to during the course of the investigation.
Okay, what exactly happened?
Well, according to the police report and according to sources, there was unwanted contact from multiple students toward multiple students that occurred on a few different occasions. The story that I'm getting is a lot of this perhaps took place in the field house, which is essentially the JV and varsity locker room that's out by Hamilton's football field at Jerry Loper Stadium. The freshmen are in a completely different locker room, and this would have been the end of one of the suspects' freshman year, so it's possible he had been practicing with the JV at that time. But there was unwanted contact of sexual nature on multiple occasions. Some of the things listed in the police notes include like digital penetration and attempting to use a cell phone over the clothes to simulate sexual penetration. And so, I mean, these are pretty serious allegations.
Mm. Ralph Amson with us, ArizonaVarsity.com. From your understanding, is this something where there could be more people coming forward on this in the next week, 2 weeks? You said that there's still a lot more that could come out earlier off the top on this. You're expecting more people to come forward?
Well, yeah, what concerns me most is there was initially an ABC 15 report, which wasn't entirely accurate in the way that it portrayed the people that were interviewed in the report as being football players. They're not listed anywhere on any rosters. But in that ABC 15 news report, they claim to have spoken to multiple former football players who said that they left Hamilton's football team due to hazing. Now, given the accuracy of the initial portion of that report, I can't say whether or not they actually spoke to actual football players. But when you hear something like that reported, that's incredibly concerning that it could go beyond anybody that the police have initially talked to. And considering the police repeatedly are asking for anybody else who may have any other information or who may have been affected by this to come forward, you have to think that there's a thought process, at least on their side, that not everyone involved in this has been interviewed or talked to.
Help the viewer and the listener out on this side that I've been told, I'm sure you've heard it as well, I just haven't been in there and noticed it. The coach's office is obstructed. They cannot see out into the locker room. I've heard that repeatedly on this. Thus, the coaches were unaware that this was happening. Correct or not?
Yeah, so I've heard this as well, that this has come out. And it is true that within the field house and every one of the former players that I talked to, that there are obstructed views, as would be in every locker room situation. When I played at Chandler High, when their locker rooms were on the old North Campus, there was absolutely no way that coaches would be able to see everything that went on in the locker room. And there's a potential that things took place, outside of a locker room situation. But if they took place in the field house, yes, there are obstructed views, but at the same time, the timeline of it, and this doesn't speak to anybody's level of complicity in anything, the timeline would suggest that nobody, if nobody was to know, that not only did it happen in full view of some people, but that it was not reported to coaches at any time in 2015, in 2016, or in 2017 when these arrests were made. And so I have heard that used as reasoning, not necessarily an excuse, and not by anybody within the coaching staff, but I have heard that, and it is true. You can't see everything that's going on from the field house.
Do you expect Steve Bellis to return as head coach of Hamilton after this is all said and done?
I believe that if he is not complicit in anything that happened, that should be something that will be considered. My personal belief is that he won't be back. We've seen coaches get cleared of investigations, a la Roy Lopez at Marcos Denisa a couple of years ago, given the option to come back. And because of the process and feeling like his name was unfairly drugged through the mud, he decided to move on. And so I don't necessarily think that if Steve Bellis is in a position to return, he'll be welcomed back. One of the things I've noticed is there hasn't really been a massive outpouring of support to have him return. And I think one of the reasons for that is the seriousness of the allegations and nobody from the district really being able to talk about what happened or get their side out there. And, you know, if he didn't do anything wrong, if this ultimately happened under, you know, Rico Tipton's watch or something like that, the current freshman coach at the time, or if this was a JV issue, or if it was never reported, you know, would he want to return? And I'm not sure with how serious this is going to get that the answer would be yes, especially considering we're in a situation right now where a lot of his previous issues, whether they're related to this or not, are being brought back up, whether that's, you know, him being on the sideline of a Mountain Point thing, his run-ins with the AIA, the suspension for the Centennial game in 2015, things that don't really have anything to do with hazing per se. But because you have people that aren't big fans of this program, whether they've beaten them or they have personal issues, you know, they're going to be bringing up things that happened in the past that will kind of muddy the waters even further. And I think create less of a desire to have anybody return. People want someone or something concrete to blame, and they want to see a change for their own personal comfort.
Okay, a couple other questions. I appreciate your time. Parents, I was hearing from many people around the program, the parents of the seniors in particular were equating this to Penn State and wanted to move their kids down the street to Chandler High. As many as 12 night before last were considering leaving, including their high-profile tailback. That has since calmed down and cooled down. Did you hear the same thing? What is your view of that? I know they lost one big-time defensive player down the street to Chandler yesterday.
Yeah. So there are players who, you know, and ultimately it's going to be parents who are really at the helm of any decisions that are made. There are players who online are portraying themselves as, you know, supporting Hamilton no matter what, and they would never transfer for any reason. You know, and they're getting a lot of support from a massive 4,000 person student body, you know, for remaining loyal to their school. And there are other players, that have decided along with their parents that this isn't the best situation for them. You know, they don't know what the coaching situation is going to be like when the season comes. They feel like there are a lot of seniors, incoming seniors, who are incredibly upset by the fact that the name on their jersey is going to be sullied from this point on. And I can't really disagree with that point, having, you know, and you'll remember this as well, the Mountain View scandal, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s, it was really, really hard for them to overcome that as well. If you had that Mountain View Toros name on your jersey, you were associated with something you may not have been involved in.
Good stuff. I mean, there's other things I would like to get to you on, but I'll let you go off that. I appreciate your time and insight. Let's do it again sometime.
I appreciate it, Brad. Thank you.
Stay well. There's Ralph Amston, ArizonaVarsity.com. Check out his content. They have a terrific podcast there at C-Town. Really good. Back with more after this time out. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. So the Masters starts tomorrow. I will be perfectly honest with you. Tomorrow, I am, not that I'm not anyways, but really transparent here. Tomorrow's going to be a hard day to do a show. I have a bank of monitors here. There's three monitors off to the side. It's not that I'm not into you guys every day doing the show. It's just when it's Masters on a Thursday, I do this a lot. I mean, Eric sits over here. If you're wondering why I tilt my head this way, Eric sits this way. I don't just do the TV thing where I look at straight ahead the whole time.
What you could do is you could just pretend like you're talking to me, but there's a monitor that is pretty much like straight in your vision for talking to me. So you could pretend like you're talking to me, but you couldn't really be listening to what I were saying. You just watch golf.
If you move the monitors down a little bit, I'm serious. When it comes to the Masters, I'm like this weekend, I've got a club basketball tournament. I've got some family obligations, and I'm going to blow them all off, I think. I don't know.
I don't really care about Thursday, Friday, but I care about Saturday, Sunday for the Masters.
If you think of the drama.
But I'm a very casual golf fan.
No, I get that. It's not like I'm the golf guy inside and out.
No,
I love to play.
No, but you like it a lot more than I do, and you follow it a lot closer than I do.
I try to follow everything, and I think so. Like, the storylines are compelling, Eric. That's the thing about this year's Masters. You have Dustin Johnson, who's ranked number one in the world. This guy was living out of a bottle about 4 years ago. He had serious, serious issues. And now he's the number one player in the world. Problem is, the number one ranked player in the world has not won at Augusta in 15 years. Last time a guy did, his name was Tiger Woods. Jason Day had to walk off the course and was crying because his mother looked like she was going to die a few weeks back. And now she's rallied to the point where Jason Day said, if I'm in contention, she may come down here. Now, how moving is that? You have Phil Mickelson, who was 55th last week at Shell. And it's just, it's Phil at Augusta. And most notably, you have Jordan Spieth, who last year was doing this. I mean, 12th hole, and he does a quadruple bogey on 12. That's things that we would all do. And so when Jordan Spieth is at number 12, and let's just say he craps the bed tomorrow at number 12, although tomorrow it's supposed to be rainy and windy. The weekend's supposed to be beautiful from a weather standpoint, from my understanding. But let's just say Jordan Spieth doesn't do well at 12 tomorrow or Friday. You cannot tell me that's not going to be in the back of his head. A 23-year-old who gagged away last year the championship, you can't tell me it's not going to be in the back of his head. He had a 3-stroke lead on 12 in the final round at Augusta as a 22-year-old and lost it. So he's going to deal with wind and putting out there. You have Rory McIlroy, who I'd love to see do well. I happen to like Rory McIlroy. I happen to like Ricky Fowler. If this isn't like NASCAR where you look at drivers and say, I don't like that guy, and he's driving the wrong kind of car. There's not a golfer that I look at. There's been very few through the years. I mean, when Colin Montgomery was in his prime, it's like, okay, he's pretty much a stuffed shirt. I don't really care much for him. But outside of that, you know, for the most part, I've had good dealings with golfers, and I kind of like them. Yeah, I miss Tiger Woods on one hand. On the other hand, I wish he would just go away. Please retire. This is not... If you look at where Tiger Woods was and what he did, and now where Tiger Woods last Friday night, Tiger Woods announced that he was pulling out of Augusta. He was essentially doing a news dump. Friday night, late night, that's where you put news you don't want anybody to see. Well, let me fill you in on something. It's Tiger bleeping Woods. So when his people are trying to hide the fact he's not going to play at Augusta and soften the blow, are you kidding me? And I don't know when we're going to see him again. I'm kind of tired of just waiting around for him. If you're not healthy, just retire, please. Because it's no fun. You know, I love Steve Nash to death, but it pained me to sit here on the air his last year in Phoenix and say, Robert, you need to trade him. This isn't going well. He can't move. And the longer you keep him on the floor, the slower the turnaround's going to be. But no, we got to keep him here because we need to put butts in the seats in 2011, in 2010. And so where are we? We're in 2017 and nothing's really changed. It's just such ass backwards thinking sometimes by these guys. In Tiger's case, it's just hard to watch. Tony Romo's getting pretty well crushed by those that want him to keep playing football. Who are we to say you should go play football rather than, hey, why don't you put on a new suit and you're going to go sit up in a booth and nobody's going to chase you and try to kill you. And guess what? You're going to make big jack and you get to fly in on a Friday morning or a Thursday night and you go home Sunday night and you do it for 18 weeks. I mean, who are we to get on Tony Romo about that? And then the story with Amazon. Eric, did you see Amazon yesterday with the Thursday night package with Twitter?
I did not. I did not.
So, you know, when I went to you and said, we need to go do streaming, I think you kind of looked at me cross-eyed. And when you said, well, you should be on a radio station, I said, we don't have to be on a radio station. But we were for a bit. Here's where it is now with streaming. So Twitter paid $10 million to the NFL for Thursday Night Football last year. Amazon walked in and wrote a check for $50 million, and Twitter went bye-bye. So Amazon is going to do the streaming of Thursday Night Football this year. It's only going to continue to grow that it is on your device, and these leagues are going to pay to be on your device rather than when you get home to watch television. It's like being on radio. You're on radio when you're in your car, and that's it. How many of you get, I mean, that's just the way it is.
Yeah, that's the beautiful loophole when it comes to digital. Like, you don't have to pack up your TV and put it on your back. You just take your phone out of your pocket and, hey, let's watch the game.
$50 million so that they can be here.
Hope you have unlimited data if you're going to stream one of those games, by the way.
$50 million. So, I mean, technology, and this is just the front end of this. Can you imagine when the NFL rights deal expires? Like, I think it's 2020, the gob of money they're going to get in digital. And when the Big Ten deal expires, they're getting $40 million a school right now. This is in 2017. I mean, that's why ESPN is laying off people, because they know it's coming. We cannot stay on the air if we have these rights deals and all these front-facing talent. We can't do that. The mouse is going to say, forget it. It's really interesting.
I had to share this with you before we got off the air.
Yeah.
This is from TMZ Sports, and TMZ Sports is good at covering and uncovering things like this. Report, Tom Brady jersey case cracked by a 19-year-old.
How do you do it?
The man who led authorities to the stolen Tom Brady Super Bowl jersey is 19-year-old Pats fan who reportedly tipped off feds during a bizarre business deal with Mauricio Ortega.
The guy from Mexico.
Correct. Dylan Wagner, a sports memorabilia collector who had been in contact with Ortega after selling him a jersey on eBay. So as the story goes, Ortega sent Wagner a big collection of his jerseys. And one of the jerseys in the picture just happened to be Tom Brady's white Super Bowl jersey with the Super Bowl logo that only those Super Bowl jerseys have. So Wagner says he had read, he saw the SB 49 jersey had gone missing, so he pressed Ortega about how he got it. Ortega's response was, "I'll tell you later." Wagner says he went to a friend who happens to be an ATF special agent, and that guy passed the info to the FBI. Wagner says he later provided the FBI with addresses for Ortega.
Idiot.
So all this started because some guy put pictures on eBay.
So he snuck in and took the jersey.
Yep, and was then dumb enough to put it out on a social platform like eBay, where millions upon millions of billions of people go every day to buy merchandise.
Go on eBay. Well, why not? I think Tom Brady actually said in the locker room, "Let's look for it on eBay."
Remember, he did.
Remember that clip?
You're right. Yeah, he did.
The clip you had. Yeah.
Half kidding. Half angry and half kidding.
So, well, Brady's got to give this guy something.
That's how it ends. It ends with, so, Tom, .. reward, question mark.
I mean, what would you give that guy?
If I were Brady, I would go to...
Cash and season tickets?
I would go to the Kraft family and say, this guy has season tickets for as long as he wants them.
Season tickets, but...
Because he's a Pats fan. What a perfect combination.
He's 19. You got to give him some cash, right?
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe? What are you talking about?
Pay for the rest of his college.
I mean,
his college kid.
Here's 50 grand. Because what was the guy asking for the jersey?
I don't remember. But the jersey was estimated at, I guess, $500,000, I believe, the estimated value of something like that.
So here is $50,000 for your hard work, and here's season tickets. And
then, that kid's stoked.
And then that guy can put the tickets up on eBay. Of course he could.
We live in a capitalistic world, so.
Sometimes. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. There is plenty of content up on our website right now. Pro, college, high school, college, pro. Makes no difference to us. Just things that we see in the state of Arizona. Our chairman of the board is Jared Nielsen. He had a rough morning, but he made it. Eric Sorensen didn't have a rough morning because he's Eric.
Something was really bugging Jared. He's going to hit me when he hears this. Yeah. It's an inside joke.
It was bugging him?
It
was bugging him.
Things were bugging him last night, so.
I'm bugged by all this.
Yeah.
Thanks for being with us. Hey, thanks for sponsoring and thanks for watching. Appreciate our sponsors. Appreciate you to support them. Without them, we're not here. Thanks for being with us.